right, wake up. That's Funkadelic from America Eats Its Young. Wake up. Live in the presence of the future. And the show today is really going to take us there. And I'm Michael Slate, and this is Beneath the Surface with Michael Slate. Really happy to welcome you to the show today. Later on in the show, we'll be talking with Chris Strachwitz from the Arhuli Foundation and Arhuli Records. And it's about a collection, the largest single collection of Mexican and Mexican-American frontera music in the world has been digitized and is now resting, and hopefully not resting that much, but at UCLA, at the Chicano Studies Research Center. And we're going to be talking with Chris about that music, about the effort to get that collection, have people have access to it. We're also scheduled to talk with Gareth Porter, journalist Gareth Porter, about what's been going on in Iran, with Iran, and the whole dispute around nuclear weapons and the lies that have been used to actually justify, including some of these reports that have been used to justify the attack on Iran. And we're having a little bit of trouble reaching Gareth, but we will continue to try. Until then, and actually not even until then, because I'm really happy to welcome back to the show after some time, is Larry Everest. He's a journalist with Revolution Newspaper. He's also the author of Oil, Power, and Empire, Iraq and the U.S. Global Agenda. And Larry's been writing a lot, both on Iran and on Afghanistan. And I wanted to talk to him today about Afghanistan. Larry, welcome to the show.
Hey, Michael. Good to be with you.
Yeah. You know, listen, here's the situation. We're 8 years into the war now. We're looking at the you know, what's going on. It seems, you know, there's a tremendous amount of arguing that's burst out. We've gone from, you know, the rah-rahism, the really bellicose speech at the Democratic National Convention given by Obama, the idea that it was going to be almost sort of if not a cakewalk, at least they were going to drive a bulldozer through and settle things once and for all. Now we're looking at some things where it's just not that evident that that's the way it's going to go. You know, in fact, there's a lot of bickering and disputes that have been going on in relation to that. There's the generals, you know, talking about what they're going to do, and there's the Obama administration, different officials in there talking about what, you know, that the generals better keep their opinions to themselves. And then there's, you know, all kinds of back and forth going on, and the kind of bickering and arguing that's broken out is really a whole different scene, I think, in relation to all this these days. So, you know, you've written an article called, and I think it's actually a fascinating article. It's on Afghanistan, the immorality of supporting imperialist war for promises of safety, or how 8 years of unjust war have strengthened the Taliban. And you make the point in here about this is after 8 years, the U.S., during which U.S. claimed it was bringing democracy and liberation to Afghanistan, what has happened is the occupiers and their client regime are more widely despised than ever, and the Taliban is stronger than ever. Why? What happened?
Well, first, Michael, I think that people should. There's a tendency to, when these debates come up, to forget about history and to forget about what's happened and sort of buy into whichever argument the ruling class is putting forward at any given point. But I think looking at these 8 years and thinking about it is really stunning, because the Taliban is a reactionary force. It was widely hated in Afghanistan for its medieval sort of theocracy that it set up, that including the stadium stoning of women who didn't wear the veil or were accused of various violations of Islamic strictures. It was a nightmare, and the Taliban was fairly quickly overthrown in 2001, in October 2001, 8 years ago, when the U.S. forces went in. But the United States, despite promises of liberation and Laura Bush saying the United States was going in to liberate women, the war in Afghanistan was conceived from the beginning as part of an overall war of greater empire. It wasn't conceived by a different group of people or at a different time than the Iraq invasion, and they even had plans for regime change in Iran. It was conceived as a multi-country, multifaceted global war to defeat Islamic fundamentalism, but also to restructure this entire Middle East, Central Asian region of the world and put it more firmly under the control of U.S. imperialism and strengthened its integration into U.S. imperialism and global capitalism and use this control of this region to prevent rivals like Russia and China from rising. So that was the actual agenda. And when the United States implemented that kind of agenda, it did not mean going into a place like Afghanistan and uprooting the very horrific feudal and religious and economic relations, both capitalist and feudal relations, that have made Afghanistan one of the most impoverished countries in the world and enforced the just terrible suffering on the people of Afghanistan. Instead, the United States immediately went in, and what did they do? They allied with people like the Northern Alliance and other warlords, tribal chiefs, militia heads, landed and propertied elements, including somebody like General Dostum, who was infamous for stuffing 2,000 suspected Taliban fighters into boxcars, letting them suffocate to death, and then just dumping them in the desert. Dostum has a long record, including assassinating Afghan Maoists and other forces opposed to what he was going to do. These were the people the United States quickly cobbled into a government. One reason is the United States is as a matter of course relies on these sorts of reactionary forces when they go in, but there was a particular necessity to do so in the case of Afghanistan, because Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld had this regional vision in mind. They wanted to get this over with quickly, move on quickly to Iraq, which they viewed as the real prize in the region. So all the more reason to go with a force that already existed, that already controlled a certain amount of territory, that already had militias, and try to cobble together this government. Well, what has happened over these 8 years is this government has acted as such forces do. There's massive exploitation. That hasn't been done away with. The peasants and small farmers in Afghanistan have not been liberated from their subordination either to landlords or even to tribal chiefs, to traditional relations, to backward forms of production. Corruption, certainly, it's not even really sort of correct to maybe call it corruption. It's more just a way of doing business in which these propertied upper class landed elements are in control of how wealth and aid and everything else is distributed, and they use that to fortify their position. The treatment of women hasn't fundamentally been changed. There have been certain laws passed, but overall, the situation for women is still a nightmare. So you have this so-called new government, and conditions in Afghanistan, have remained a nightmare. 80% of Afghan women suffer domestic violence. Honor killings and rapes are on the rise. Most women in Afghanistan are under control of their male relatives. An Afghan woman dies in childbirth every 30 minutes. This is the kind of life. And then on top of that, you have this very horrific war being waged in which the United States, certainly the Taliban has killed many civilians, no doubt about it, and the United States has as well with these aerial bombings. Recently near Kunduz, which is in northern Afghanistan, 500 people in a village had come out because a couple of tanker trucks got stuck in the mud, and there was the prospect of having fuel, just getting free fuel. And people are so destitute. Remember, the average Afghan earns less than $1 a day. 42% of Afghans live on less than $14 a month. I mean, this is staggering poverty. So they came out to get this gasoline, and, two U.S. bombers blew up these tankers. And so there's a fireball that consumes nearly 100 people, including 60 children.
So this and kind of this kind of impact is actually, this is the point about it's actually strengthening the Taliban and the people actually the hatred for what the U.S. has brought to this area. Both, you know, and you can see this thing in terms of explaining this point you made about both of these things being the occupiers and their puppets being hated more than ever, and the Taliban being stronger than ever, is rooted exactly in the way that the war has been going. But here's a question for you. And I think it's important to jump into this to some extent. And actually, I'd like to know, will you be able to stay for probably about a half an hour? Because I think we're having a lot of trouble getting hold of Gareth.
Michael,
I don't know what happened.
Michael, I will stay as long as you like. I'm like the guest
you know,
that would not
I
leave.
Know, you know, you I was know? I was I mean, thinking, yeah, it'd be really difficult to get rid of you. So I'll just keep you on. All right, man. So let me remind listeners that I'm Michael Slate, and this is Beneath the Surface with Michael Slate. And I'm talking today with Larry Everest, who's a journalist with Revolution Newspaper and the author of Oil, Power, and Empire, Iraq and the U.S. Global Agenda. And we're talking about Afghanistan. We're going to segue at some point into Iran, I think, towards the end of the conversation. And also, let me remind you that this is KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. Now, Larry, here's a question for you, because, you know, you have this clearly, you know, things are just not going the way that they wanted them to go. And you have this McChrystal, General McChrystal, who's, you know, arguing all these things about, you know, when Obama said that this was the good war and that this was a must-win war. And his thing is leaning towards, along with the neocons, leaning towards that this, you know, agreement with that. And that you have to pursue things in a certain way, including calling for almost 60,000 troops to be added. And then you have others who are saying, no, 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 you know, we have to be very careful about this. And it seems like, you know, that there's even the idea of, there's a little bit of, you know, looking into a really, you know, troubling at best future for the U.S. imperialists. I think is this right or wrong? Is that there may be actually people thinking among them that this, you know, this is not going to be all that easy, and we actually might face something we didn't think we were going to face, which is defeat.
Well, I think that's definitely, they're staring into the abyss. I mean, McChrystal's report says that the situation overall is deteriorating, and he himself warns of possible failure. Now, look, all of these things you have to take with a grain of salt. I mean, there's truth being spoken in these different reports, but there's also political truth. In other words, sometimes they're shaping the story in a way to get the particular objective they want. So we need to subject all of these ruling class reports and statements to analysis. But nonetheless, I think it's probably overall accurate when McChrystal says the situation is deteriorating from the standpoint of U.S. imperialism, and there's a possibility of failure. The Taliban is resilient and growing, he says. The U.S. and the Afghan government face a crisis of confidence. And, you know, let's recall there's just been massive election fraud on the part of the U.S. hand-picked Karzai government. So I even saw one report on NBC that said the Taliban are thought to be active in 80% of the country, stronger than they even were when they governed in October 2001. And, you know, that goes to your first point, and we should just keep constantly in mind is how the clash between imperialism and Islamic fundamentalism is a real clash, but at the same time, these two reactionary poles actually reinforce and strengthen each other. There's a dynamic here that you can see over these 8 years, and of course, perpetuating this war is going to perpetuate that reactionary dynamic. And one of the, you know, what we were just talking about, you see your children blown up in front of you, what are people going to do? They're going to turn to somebody that's opposing this, even if they don't particularly like them, and that's a lot of what we've seen. But in terms of the debate, I think that the U.S. is faced with a very acute situation. Peggy Noonan, who is a former Reagan speechwriter, was writing about this in the Wall Street Journal, and her argument is it's the hell of withdrawal versus the hell of staying. And, you know, she says nobody is certain to what to do. This isn't an obvious choice, a no-brainer. or obviously a stupid option. There are no good options here. And it is not only because the United States finds itself in this spiraling dynamic in which the more military force they have tried to apply, the more it has destabilized and strengthened the Taliban, you know, and also spread the chaos and the destabilization into Pakistan, which is a much bigger country. But all this is going on at a very precarious moment when the U.S. military is overstretched. It's, you know, there's still 130,000 troops in Iraq. The U.S. has been fighting these wars for 8 years. They're now close to 70,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan. There's just been the greatest financial crisis in U.S. history. There are other powers that are gaining ground in the world, and they're not, you know, openly able to, you know, there's not a frontal challenge to the U.S. position, but there's certainly growing rivalry, China, even China and Russia, and then even, of course, all the difficulties with Iran. So, you know, this is an extremely difficult situation, and they're basically debating. I mean, McChrystal has reportedly asked for up to 80,000 more troops. I mean, that's a huge commitment, because his argument is that if you don't pacify certain areas and win, you know, the support of the, or at least, new, you know, have people accept your rule and prevent the Taliban from overthrowing the regime, if you don't do that, there's going to be chaos that could both destabilize the whole region and also lead to a retreat or a defeat by the U.S., which would have enormous global repercussions, because these global imperialist superpowers, I mean, it is, it's like the mafia. If you show weakness, you're finished. You know, a lot of the power of the United States comes from the perception and the reality that it's got a huge military, that it's willing to use it. And if it's seen that it can be defeated in a place like Afghanistan, that weakens its so-called street cred, if you want to use that language, all around the world. The other thing that's of great concern to these people is Islamic fundamentalism in all its different forms. And right now there's a debate. Is Al-Qaeda the same as the Taliban? And what are the different elements of this? But nonetheless, there is a broad Islamic fundamentalist trend that's been rising across the Middle East, largely in reaction to the depredations and the massive dislocations caused by imperialism. And this fundamentalism, it doesn't offer any sort of path to liberation whatsoever. It represents the outmoded and traditional social forces and classes in these oppressed countries. But it has created a problem for the United States.
Well, let me ask you this. Because I think actually I don't want to short trip this next part of the interview, and you're leading into this, which I think is actually, you know, there is a relationship here in terms of what you're talking about. There's what the imperialists are dealing with, and then there's the question that's become a very big question once again. It was at one point it reared its head at a certain point in the Iraq, in the beginning of the Iraq War, when people were arguing for immediate withdrawal, and various, you know, social democrats and people, you know, in the left wing of the Democratic Party were arguing for responsible withdrawal. And now today you have this kind of situation that you're describing, but you also have, then you have people who have been pretty much opposed to the war all the way through and who have been speaking out and doing some good things in terms of opposition and resistance, although, you know, they've come at it from different angles. But now people like Medea Benjamin are arguing, she's come back from Afghanistan and arguing that actually we need a responsible withdrawal from Afghanistan. There is no other choice that would mean it be at all meaningful for the people of Afghanistan in any good way except to have a responsible withdrawal. What do you say to something like that?
Well, it's an important question. A lot of people feel this way. I will give the short, snappy answer, and I'll be channeling Craig Murray, the former British ambassador, when someone asked him how he thought the U.S. should leave Iraq, and he said preferably on airplanes. And it was sort of a snappy response, but it had real meaning. In other words, what needs to happen is the U.S. needs to leave, because as long as the United States stays in Iraq or in Afghanistan, it is going to be pursuing imperialist objectives. It is not going to be doing what Code Pink or, you know, other progressive or radical people want it to do. It is going to be pursuing its global imperialist agenda. It is going to be trying to strengthen the relations of domination in the countries that it is involved in. And A, that's a nightmare for the people there. B, it fuels Islamic fundamentalism and deepens this spiral. We need to break out of this situation where people feel their only choices are picking one or the other of these reactionary forces. And number three, any argument that argues that there's some validity to U.S. occupation in whatever form it is legitimizing other occupations. I often think that, for example, the attack and the occupation of the former Yugoslavia in the 90s in the name of humanitarian relief, and there were crimes being committed, no doubt, but this helped pave the way for the invasion of Iraq in the name of and of Afghanistan freeing the people. So for all those reasons, the responsible thing is to demand the U.S. leave immediately. And
but what about people saying to you, I mean, look, people are going to come back to you and they're going to say, look, all the horror that you just described, all the things that have been unleashed, you know, in the course of the last 8 years, and most of them under the Bush administration, and most of them in a kick-ass and forget about, you know, collecting names, just go through the country and rip it up until you can, you know, basically declare victory. You know, they'll say all those things have been unleashed, and what needs to happen now? And there is, I mean, you know, people will make an argument that, like, look, there has to be some way for some force, something, to come in and modify or moderate what the U.S. does, to turn their occupation force into something other than what it is. And I mean, people will argue that, even with you saying, you know, look, this is what they've done. Well, people know what they've done, but then the question of what can they be made to do that will at least give the people of Afghanistan a position to move off of?
Well, I think we have to do two things. One, and this is something World Can't Wait has been stressing, we need mass political resistance, you know, in this country, that against these wars of empire, against the torture and so on, and break through this suffocating silence that exists and help. This, if this happens in this country, this is one contribution toward you know, creating a different way, you know, an alternative to either of these other two, to create more political space for this. The other thing I think is important is supporting revolutionary and radical secular forces from places like Afghanistan and Iran, who want neither imperialism nor the Taliban and Islamic fundamentalism. That's also, that is the alternative for the people of Afghanistan, including revolutionary communist forces who see that you need to thoroughly break out of the hold of feudalism and imperialism, and that you need to overthrow those two mountains to really liberate the people. Those are the kinds of things that we need to be working at. Yes, they're very difficult. It's not some immediate, you know, and easy kind of a solution, but we've seen in 8 years, and the U.S. has changed. Look at, think about this. In the last 6 months or so, the United States has changed its tactics to basically what, you know, Code Pink called for, doing more training of Afghan troops, trying to promote economic development, facilitating reconciliation. And in this case, what that really means is reconciliation between the Taliban and the Karzai reactionaries, and doing it in a way that prevents the return of the Taliban. Well, that's a thumbnail sketch of a lot of, and I'm not cheap shot here, you know, but that is a lot of what the U.S. is trying to do. But it's doing it on the basis of being an occupying imperialist army, A, and B, those actions, as we've been talking. Look at one thing, you know, there's been today, yesterday, here's one example. Yesterday, there was an article in the New York Times saying civilian goals, these goals of economic reconstruction and so on, have not been met. And there was a stunning statistic. The U.S. has given $13 billion to Afghanistan. The ministry responsible can't account for any of it. Why is that? Because even if the U.S. is giving aid, it's being mediated by, it's going through, A, what the objectives of the U.S. are, and B, this whole ruling structure in Afghanistan, which is using whatever money they get to aside from the graft and corruption and all that, to reinforce their dominant oppressive position within the country, not to liberate the people. So you get a situation in which people are turning in frustration to the Taliban because at least there's some administrative procedures that they've put in place, whereas, you know, the central government's not able to dispense doesn't have any kind of legal or court system that people can turn to. So that's the situation, and as long as the U.S. is there, that situation is going to deepen and worsen. Look, you could make the same argument 7 years ago and say the U.S. shouldn't withdraw from Afghanistan because, after all, wouldn't that be irresponsible? And I do want to say, you know, Medea, Code Pink, and other groups are raising, doesn't the U.S. have an obligation to Afghanistan? Yes, the U.S. has a tremendous debt to Afghanistan, but, you know, the way for people in this country to carry forward our responsibility is to fight to, politically and ideologically prevent this empire from carrying out these kind of crimes.
Okay, that's, and on that note, we're going to have to wrap it up. And I think that's a very important point to end on, because that's actually, when you look at what's going on in the world today, when you look at what's going on in response to the kind of horrors that have been unleashed, you know, the hell in Afghanistan is the hell for the people of Afghanistan. That's really what's been left out of all this. And what you've been talking about, it has been really pointing to that. And I think the idea that the people here and the people of the world, the responsibility we have to the people of Afghanistan is doing exactly what you're saying, doing everything that can be done to oppose that, you know, to oppose what imperialism is doing there. Larry, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks a lot, Michael. Sure. Take care.
Thank you. You too. And we're going to be coming right back. We're going to take a short break. And let me remind you, actually, that I'm Michael Slate, and this is Beneath the Surface with Michael Slate. And you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. We've been talking with Larry Everest. He's a writer with Revolution Newspaper. We've been talking about Afghanistan, the current situation, the arguments over what to do there, including arguments about what should the people do in response to the continued U.S. presence in Afghanistan. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Chris Strachwitz about a new collection of music of the world's top online archive of Mexican-American recordings at UCLA, and Chris's role in making all that happen.